On Jordan, Stormy Banks has a very special place in my heart. It is the very first song that I ever led. And since nobody came up in the middle of the first verse and took Brother Steve by his armpits and lifted him up and put him back in the pew, I can assume that Steve did a better job than I did. I was a little younger than Steve, though, in all fairness. I'm going to do something here this evening that I deliberately avoid doing as much as I possibly can. I'm going to preach to individual people. Preachers get accused of doing this all the time, and maybe with some cause. Maybe some preachers do it. Maybe I do it more than I realize I do. But generally speaking, it's a better idea to leave individual messages for individual people and group messages for the group. There are circumstances, some extreme situations, where it's appropriate to talk about specific issues that involve individual people. Usually it's more than one, though, from the group. This evening, I want to talk to our elders. If you are the wife of an elder, or if you are a prospective elder, or the wife of a prospective elder, or just a member of the congregation who loves the Lord and loves what the Bible teaches in a general sense, feel free to listen along. We're not saying nobody else is allowed to listen to the text, to the sermon here. But this is primarily emphasizing what elders are supposed to be doing. And I was inspired to preach the sermon a while back. I forget exactly when it was. I think it was during the gospel meeting. I just scribbled a note, Shepherd of the Shepherds, in my notes, and I decided I was going to come back to this. And that was part of the reason why we had the lesson this morning, talking about the shepherd of the sheep. What I want to do here this evening is kind of turn that around. And if this is the role that Jesus takes for himself as the shepherd of the sheep, and if Jesus is called the chief shepherd in 1 Peter chapter 5, then there must be a sense in which he is the shepherd of the shepherds. And perhaps it's appropriate for him to look at the elders, shepherds of a local church, in the same way that shepherds look at the members as a whole. So that's what we're going to do with a little bit here today, and I hope this is interesting. I hope, of course, more than anything else, that it's true to God's word. We've talked this morning about the role that the shepherd takes for himself. Godly shepherds of the people of God know their role. And Jesus knows his role, of course, looking over the sheep. The shepherds of God's people know that they are not the owners of the flock. There are some elderships that I'm not sure I've actually known of any in the past. I certainly heard of them who expressed what amounts to ownership of the congregation. They do whatever they feel like doing. They do it when they want, where they want. They don't answer to the members. They don't answer to anybody but God. And to look at them, that doesn't look like they answer to God very much in their own mind either. That's not godly. That is not the way that things are supposed to be. Godly shepherds, people who understand their role as the leaders of God's people, understand that they are not the owners of the sheep. And that means that any important decision, we're going to talk about decisions in a little bit, but any significant decision that's to be made has already been made because they have a chief shepherd. And it's important for us to understand the difference between leading in terms of judgment and leading in terms of doctrine. We refer to, if I remember right, to Hebrews 13, verse 17, we'll probably refer to it again, the idea of obeying our leaders. I get a little bit of pushback on this, but I just can't see how you can read this passage any other way. When we're talking about obeying our leaders, we're talking about obeying them in matters of judgment. Because to obey leaders in matters of doctrine is unscriptural. Who do we obey in doctrinal matters? We obey Jesus, right? Jesus is the chief shepherd. He's the one who gives us the rules. And therefore, it would be inappropriate for the writer of Hebrews to tell us that there's some blanket obligation to follow after physical leaders who may or may not be doing the right thing. The only kind of obedience that makes any sense in the context of Hebrews chapter 13 is leadership with regard to judgment matters. That's why elders are appointed, so that they can exercise judgment on behalf of the entire group. But that's all they exercise. They do not see themselves as doctrinal arbitrators. They can't. That position has already been filled. They see themselves as those who are guiding the sheep in the direction that they ought to be going. They do not adopt for themselves this characteristic of the hireling that we talked about earlier also. In Acts chapter 20, in verse number 28 and following, we see Peter. I was right the first time, right? Paul admonishing the elders there in Ephesus, men who he had a great deal of regard for, that he had a history with, but men who were set up for some trouble in the not-too-distant future. He says in verse number 28 of Acts chapter 20, "Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock among whom the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his own blood. I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock, and from among your own selves men will arise, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. Therefore, be on the alert, remembering that a day and night for a period of 3 years, I did not cease to admonish each one with tears." This is the role that Paul had taken for himself, guiding them, preparing these men for the day that he would not be there anymore, and they would be in charge exclusively for guiding that congregation under the ultimate oversight of Jesus Christ himself. This is what they do. They exercise oversight. They are not doing this for their own benefit. They are doing this for the glory of God, for the glory of our Savior, Jesus Christ. They do this by, first of all, as Paul indicates here, remaining faithful, making sure that they themselves are standing for the truth. And then having done that, keep watch for others. It's similar to the role of parents when you think about it. There's some people over here who are too young to understand this. And maybe old enough to resent this, but not old enough to understand it yet. But most of us understand what it means to be a parent. We understand that we have custody over souls. And that's a rather intimidating kind of thing. And the most important thing for us to do in those situations is make sure that we ourselves are pure, that we ourselves are doing the right thing, being a good example to those who are around us, and particularly those who are in our charge. And after having more or less put that train on the right track, never taking it for granted that we've succeeded, but we're on the right track at least, then we keep watch for those other souls. Make sure that they are doing the right thing. Make sure that they are crossing T's and dotting I's, and make sure that everything is up to code, as it were. And all of it, in all of these situations, making sure that the sheep and the needs of the sheep come first. Now, this is a concept that we see in parenting. We see it in other kinds of oversight. But it's especially significant, especially poignant with regard to local churches. That elders of a local congregation, shepherds of a local congregation, act as shepherds act out there in the field. And we were talking about this morning, right? Where a shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And we talked a little bit about what that might mean. That they aren't necessarily jumping in front of a bullet. That's not really the point. But rather that their lives, their preferences, how they would prefer to live their life is not relevant. It's not important in the big picture. The important thing is the welfare of the sheep. And that's what elders do. And I hope that something is said this evening that will encourage you to go to Brother Hardy or to Brother Larry and thank them for the work that they do. Find other elders who have meant something to you in the past and express appreciation for what they do. This is a terrifying task, an awesome task that men take upon themselves when they do this, the watching over people's souls. And a selfless task, if it's done right. Now, not all shepherds do this, but the godly ones, the ones who are taking their oversight from the chief shepherd, always put the sheep first. And a big part of putting the sheep first is getting to know the sheep. And we talked about this, if you'll remember, also this morning. Part of the reason why I'm doing these lessons back to back is not just to save on paper, but also so you can compare the notes from this morning to the notes from this evening. You'll notice that shepherding God's people looks very much like Jesus shepherding God's people. And the closer godly shepherds can get to the example of Jesus Christ, of course, the better they're going to be able to do their job. Particularly with regard to knowing the sheep. There is a special relationship between the people, as it were, and the shepherd, the sheep and the shepherd. And that's the case with regard to the people of God in general and the chief shepherd, who we talked about this morning. That's also the case with regard to the members of a local congregation and the shepherds that are watching over their souls. There is a relationship there. The needs of the sheep are evident to the shepherd. A lot of people are going to see this as meddling. A lot of people are going to see this as being nosy or whatever. And perhaps there's certainly elders that step over the line. It's a rather difficult line to draw sometimes. But there's no question that proper oversight, proper watching over the sheep is going to involve getting involved in day-to-day activities, getting involved in in behavior, in choices that are being made, sometimes choices that the sheep are making that are contrary to the sheep's own interest. It's the job of the shepherd to make sure that these behaviors get corrected. One sheep may need healing, for instance. Philippians chapter 4, verses 2 and 3 talks about the infighting that was happening there in a relatively happy church, a relatively secure church there in Philippi. But two of the women there, Euodia and Syntyche, are not getting along with one another. And he exhorts this one who is called a true yoke fellow in some versions. Whether he's talking about a particular Christian there, maybe the preacher, maybe one of the elders, or just anyone in general who is committed to the yoke of Jesus Christ. And who wants to get into the yoke with these women and help them through this difficult time. Whoever loves the Lord, whoever loves the work, and surely that should, if it involves anybody, should involve the elders. These ones are to get involved with these people so that the work can continue. Discontent, jealousy, these kind of attitudes are contagious. And we know this to be the case in other contexts. And it's the Lord's church is no exception. Every congregation of God's people I've ever known was populated by human beings. And human beings are like this. If you allow jealousy, if you allow envy, if you allow infighting to exist and to perpetuate itself before too long, there is a spirit of divisiveness that is spreading through the congregation. That works in the sheepfold. That works in God's sheepfold. It's incumbent upon the shepherds to make sure that this does not happen. Someone may need special encouragement in the church in Corinth. Remember in the 1 Corinthians letter, chapter 5 illustrates the moral problem, we'll just leave it at that, that had existed there in the church. And Paul was kind of astonished that this hadn't been handled. And he says, you need to handle this. You need to step in and correct this man and not allow this to go on anymore. And evidently the church did that because by the time he's writing the second letter, he is not only commending them for the action that they have taken and rejoicing in the fact that it has had the result of this man coming back to the Lord, he is also admonishing them to take this man back. This is a sinner who's been caught in sin, who has repented of his sin. And now it's necessary for the congregation as a whole and for the elders in particular, if elders existed there in Corinth, to lift that one up, to build him up, to strengthen him in this difficult time. A hammer is a very useful tool in your toolbox. It's not going to be useful for everything you're trying to do around the house. Sometimes a softer implement is appropriate, and that's the case in the sheepfold as well. Sometimes it's a healing kind of thing. Sometimes it's an encouraging kind of thing. Sometimes it's a feeding kind of thing. There are situations among the people of God where, as you're well aware, there is a need for truth. There is a need for the food, the bread of life. And this is administered sometimes through an official gospel preacher, sometimes through the elders themselves, sometimes in Bible classes, private classes, public classes, whatever the situation may be. But in any case, the elders are responsible for making sure that the sheep get fed. That's why we read in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17, the elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. It's entirely appropriate, under some circumstances at least, for the elders to be actively and constantly involved in the actual public teaching of God's word, whether that's from pulpit preaching or teaching Bible classes or whatever the situation may be. And whether they are engaged at that level or not, they certainly should be involved in making sure that the sheep get fed, either personally or through their agents that they choose. This is the responsibility that elders take upon themselves that should be given to them as the leaders of God's people. Someone may need training, preparing the next generation. And how critical is this? Is there anything that's more important? Do we want to have the church of the Lord be healthy in this community for the next 6 months, next year, the next 5 years? Sure. How about for the next 20 years? How about for the next 30 years, the next 50 years? It's difficult to project past that. We lose control after a certain point. But there is a certain amount of control that we can exercise beyond the immediate context. We can set wheels in motion if we choose to do so that will perpetuate the church, that will at least give us a good opportunity of teaching the truth and having the truth taught consistently and perpetually as time goes on. That's the point that Paul is making to Timothy in 2 Peter 2 and verse number 2, where he says, the things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these also to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You see, generations of teaching going on. Paul teaches Timothy. Timothy teaches the elders there in Ephesus. The elders in Ephesus teach somebody else. And before too long, you see a new generation of elders coming up who are going to be able to guide the congregation for another 20 years beyond the lifespan of the current elders. And that continues after that. If that doesn't happen, woe be to us. Well, maybe we'll be okay, because we'll be dead before this becomes a problem. The church is fine under current leadership. We don't have to worry about that. Okay, well, what about after current leadership? Part of, if not the main responsibility that elders have, is to make sure that leadership is perpetuated. Make sure that there is future leadership in the Lord's church, as much as they have control. Now, you have limited control over those things, obviously. But whatever control we do have, we need to be exercising. And so we need to be active in taking these younger men, men in their 30s and 40s, men in their 20s, men in their teens, and getting them ready for the next step that they're going to be expected to take at some point in the future. This is the role of the shepherd who lives among the sheep. And without just putting too fine a point on it, let me emphasize this. You can't live among the sheep for 5 hours a week. It just doesn't work that way. If the shepherd of the sheep, the literal shepherd of the sheep, were to check in on us every 5 hours or so, make sure everything's okay, and surely if there was a problem, the sheep would tell us about it. And that was the extent of their oversight. The sheep would be running crazy in the pasture. It would just be a nightmare. Imagine how you took care of your kids like that. Check in with your kids every once in a while. How are things going? Did you set anything on fire today? No, I didn't. Okay, well, it looks like that's probably true. Okay, well, how about any felonies? You commit any felonies? No, sir, I didn't commit any felonies. Okay, well, you just make sure you just keep that up. Okay, well, go watch TV now. Parents are expected to do a little bit more than that, right? Now, again, as with children, you don't have complete and total control. You're not on their case 24 hours a day or whatever. But there is certainly a sense in which we can, when quality time is not a substitute for quantity time. And we hear about this in parenting discussions all the time. We can talk all day long about the quality time that we spend with our kids. Quality time doesn't mean anything unless there's quantity time. The main thing is not making the best out of the time you have. The main thing is having the time. And if elders are going to be effective in guiding the sheep, the local sheep, they have to have invested not quality time, not just quality time, like we'd have in the church house, for instance, but quantity time as well. Building a bond is the responsibility of the shepherd. And I want to emphasize this point here, because lots of times we play the blame game. Well, it's not my fault. They don't want me to shepherd them. They don't want me to watch over them. So we have a sheep who is in the sheepfold, or he's in the pasture, or whatever it happens to be. And the sheep is not behaving properly. And the shepherd goes and admonishes the sheep, and, sheep, you ought to be doing a little bit better. And the sheep says, well, whatever. And, well, what are you going to do in a situation like that? The sheep doesn't want to respond to discipline. Well, I guess you just get rid of the sheep, right? Just write the sheep off. Well, I tried. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. How does the Lord describe a shepherd in Luke chapter 15? Remember, he has 100 sheep. And one of them has gone astray. What does the good shepherd do? Chases that one down, right? Hunts it down, grabs it, puts it on his shoulders, brings it back home. I found my sheep. And he rejoices in this. This is a delight to him that this one who has been lost is now found. He doesn't say, well, the important thing is that I did my best. I did my part. The sheep didn't do his part. I can sleep well at night realizing that I did my role, and the sheep is going to be lost, and that's the sheep's fault. Well, if it's the sheep's fault, I guess we can write that off, I guess, right? We don't have to worry about it. If it's the sheep's fault, the sheep is lost. It's always the sheep's fault that the sheep is lost. That's what sheep do. Sheep get lost. The shepherd has to get involved. Building the relationship with the sheep is the shepherd's responsibility. The sheep may be just too silly, too ignorant, too young, too whatever, to realize he needs a shepherd. That doesn't mean he doesn't need a shepherd. And so therefore, it's up to the adults, it's up to the grown-ups to do grown-up kind of things. Even when the child in this analogy, the sheep, doesn't especially want to be shepherded. Let's talk a little bit about working the sheep, and then we'll close up. What does working the sheep actually look like? What does tending sheep look like in a local church? First of all, first and foremost, the work of elders is to be a shepherd. And what does it mean to be a shepherd? And I said I was going to come back to the idea of decisions. And here we are. I have not heard this very much in Florida over the last 7 years. Maybe it's a Texas thing. I don't know. Or maybe it's a 20th century thing. I don't know. But when I was growing up, and really throughout my life, you hear these public prayers that well-intentioned men offer. And I'm not really criticizing. But we have these cliches that we throw out there, right? And when it occurs to us to pray for the elders, what generally happens, or has happened anyway, again, I really haven't noticed this that much here, but the prayer that I'm used to goes something like this: Lord, please be with our elders and help them make decisions that will be in the best interest of the church, that will guide us in your ways or whatever. Help them make good decisions. I'm getting a lot of vacant looks out there. Have you not heard these prayers before? Is this just me? Maybe it's just me. I don't know. Help them make good decisions. And I remember distinctly having this balloon popped when I was in college. One of my preaching mentor that I refer to many times talked about this and says, you know, there's nothing wrong with making good decisions. Making good decisions is great. You should make good decisions. But that's not what elders do. That's not the role of elders primarily. Making decisions is a very minor part of what elders do. And I didn't understand that at the time. I understand it better now. When we're talking about making decisions in the local church, typically we're talking about things like who's going to be Bible class teacher, or what our budget is going to be, or whether we're going to repair the air conditioner this year, or whether we're going to have two gospel meetings instead of one, or all these kind of sometimes important, sometimes maybe not quite so important, but details, decisions that are being made on an ongoing basis. Some of you have been in business meeting format situations where we don't do anything except make decisions, seems like. And it's a drudgery, it's a pain. Are we going to get the 50-foot garden hose, or are we going to splurge for the 75-foot garden hose? And we'll talk for 20 minutes about how long the garden hose is supposed to be. Like, this decision is the most important thing going on in local church. Anybody can make decisions. That can be delegated. And in my judgment, should be delegated. It's not the elder's job to make decisions. It's the elder's job to shepherd the sheep. To watch for souls. Anybody can set up appointments to watch for this, that, or the other. Anybody can change light bulbs. Anybody can set up a cleaning crew. Frankly, anybody can write checks. That's not the same thing as oversight. Oversight is about leading the sheep, guiding the sheep in spiritual ways. And the more elders can focus on their actual role as opposed to this other carnal role, which may be important in its place, but not the shepherd's role, the more they can focus on what they're actually supposed to be doing, the better they're going to be at it. This goes all the way back to Acts chapter 6. Remember, the apostles are essentially serving as elders. Exactly the distinction between elders and apostles is a little fuzzy. The rules were in formation in the first century. It's a little difficult to apply specifically one-to-one analogies. But the apostles are in charge of spiritual things. And they have thrust upon them this enormous carnal responsibility. There are hungry people, needy people, especially from foreign places that have come to Jerusalem. They found the gospel. They didn't want to go home. And so now they have all these needs that need to be met. And the apostles said, it's not appropriate for us to leave spiritual work and serve tables. So they find people to serve tables. They find people to do this work so they can get back to what they're supposed to be doing. And everybody was happy about it because they found good men who were responsible and who ministered in that way. And they themselves, the apostles, were able to minister in a spiritual way. That's what Lord's elders need to be doing. By building trust, this relationship is nurtured, it is fed, it grows. Trust is earned, first of all. That's how a man gets to be appointed an elder, because we trust him. And then having appointed this man as an elder, having appointed him as a shepherd, then we're going to trust him to do what he's supposed to do what he has said he's going to do what we believe he was capable of doing. And then eventually he's going to be tested. And we're going to be tested because he's going to guide us in a way that we didn't necessarily anticipate, one that we may not even agree with. But ultimately, godly people are going to act in godly ways. All of us are going to subject ourselves to the chief shepherd. And we're going to realize that God's system actually does work. It's the same way that our submission to the chief shepherd works. We trust in Jesus enough to save our souls, and then we find out that he wants us to do something we didn't want to do, but we say, you know what? I'm in this. I've submitted to the shepherd. That's what I'm going to do. And then we go that way, and we find out that it's better doing things Jesus' way than doing things our own way. The will of the shepherd that we talked about this morning, the will of the shepherd is always secondary. But the will of the sheep is also secondary. I love the expression there in 2 Timothy chapter 4, where the New American Standard Bible has here in verse number 3, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, that is the members, the sheep. But wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires. How does that work? Well, it works like this. The easiest way to have peace in a time of chaos, in a time of conflict, in a time of war, is to give the warring faction everything they want. If you give them what they want, there will be peace. At least in the short term. I'll pretty much guarantee that. If the child is going to scream until he gets ice cream, give the child ice cream. And then you have peace. It works. Trust me on this. It works. Most of you know that it works. Most of you also know that it's not necessarily the best option. In fact, it very likely is the wrong option to do in a situation like this. We're not suggesting that the interests, the likes and dislikes of members are irrelevant. They're not irrelevant. We're saying it's not the main point. And there is a failure of leadership when the primary goal of the leader seems to be making sure everybody is, quote-unquote, happy. That's not what this is all about. The words chasing chickens pops up on the screen, and my daughter Taylor cringes because she knows what's coming. And maybe I told this. This is too good of a story for me not to have told, but I'm going to tell it again just in case you missed it. When Taylor and Kylie were little kids, we went to Branson, Missouri. And I'm trying to avoid looking over here because I know Taylor's turning red. And now you're turning. Don't do that. Leave her alone. Sorry, Taylor. So there's this show, the Dolly Parton Dixie Stampede. And they're going to have all this crazy stuff down the rodeo floor and people riding horses and it's all great. And we have one of the attendants comes up and asks us if we want our children to be in the show. Well, Taylor's, I think, 5, and Kylie's 3 at the time, something like that. And Kylie says no, which surprised us a little bit. And Taylor said yes, which shocked us. And, okay, fine. Well, Taylor's going down there, and her job is to herd the chickens from one side of the auditorium to the other. And she's got a couple of chickens, or one chicken, I guess it was. And she's got to get it across the... And so they say, go! And she starts pushing the chicken, and the chicken goes in the wrong way. And Taylor to this day blames the chicken. And she's got a point. It probably wasn't a very intelligent chicken, but that's the way chickens are. And so the chicken runs to the right, and so she chases down the chicken by going to the right, and then the chicken turns to the left, and she turns over to the left, and they're going kind of round and round in circles here, and nothing's getting accomplished. And all the grown-ups think this is great, you know, because we understand exactly what's going on here. And the children don't. What's happening is chasing chickens has become a substitute for leadership. And that's what leaders oftentimes do. Grown leaders, not 5 or 6-year-old leaders, but men in their 50s, 60s, 70s. Their idea of leadership is chasing chickens. Wherever the problem is, that's where we're going to go. And then the problem is over here, now we're going to go over here. And what we need to be doing, and this works with parenting, this works with oversight in the business world, and it certainly works with the local church. There needs to be actual leadership going on, including and particularly leadership over individuals that don't especially want to be led, that may have their own ideas about how things are doing. There is no magic formula to this. It's easy to say what you should have done is do this and this. You do the best you can. That's all you can do. But instead of allowing the chicken to set the course of action, you set the course of action. Leaders lead. And that means taking charge of the situation and making sure that everybody understands this is what we are going to go. And there may be some hurting, there may be some forcing involved in certain situations. But the leadership is the one that sets the agenda for the congregation. The leadership is the one that decides what direction we are going to go. And of course, ultimately, it's always in the direction that is going to best serve the spiritual interests of the church as we all, together, individually, and collectively, try to pursue the things of Jesus Christ. That's what working the sheep is all about. And that's what you need to expect and demand, frankly, out of your elders. That's what our elders owe to us. That's what they owe to the Lord. And as we consider and give thanks for our elders, as we maybe prepare for a future stage in our life where we might be a little bit closer to the situation than others, the more we can understand about how eldership works, the more we understand about how leadership works in general under Jesus' chief leadership, I think the better equipped we're going to be to serve in that role and to appreciate those who are serving in that role and occasionally even correct those who are serving in that role who are not serving in the way that Jesus would have them serve. We're authorized, Timothy says, to rebuke an elder in the presence of two or three witnesses. If they're out of line, that's appropriate sometimes. Hopefully not, but sometimes. Regardless of the situation, though, make sure that we appreciate the role of the chief shepherd. And after having done that, appreciate the role of the shepherds that he has left in charge of local congregations. And those are my thoughts on the subject. Please consider them carefully. Read, study, pray over this. Do not hesitate to give thanks to the Lord and to our elders for the work that is being done, for the oversight that is being overseen in our own lives. And if you can manage, if it's not too inconvenient for you, try to take steps in your own life that make the job of the elder, that make the job of the shepherd a little bit easier instead of making it a little bit harder. That would be a blessing to them, certainly, and certainly a blessing to the work of Jesus Christ as a whole. The lesson is yours. Please consider it very carefully. Please apply it as you may find appropriate. We're going to offer an invitation to those who need to respond to the Lord's call. If there is some aspect of your life that is not right, if you are not operating properly under Jesus' oversight and mentorship, if you need to make correction in whatever kind of way, we offer you an opportunity to do exactly that. If you have not been baptized in water for remission of sins, we offer you an opportunity to do that and to join the flock, to join this company of believers that joyfully and willingly and enthusiastically follows after the things of Jesus Christ and ultimately toward this heavenly goal. If there's anything we do to help you walk with Christ better, please respond while we stand and sing at this time.